Hey, everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson. Gentlemen, how are things going?
Not bad.
Well, you know, it's going to be a very light podcast today. There's not much to talk about.
We're doing this whole shtick just like every other Mets podcast out there.
Yes. My very original idea.
I'm going to go with precisely the opposite. Can we take a moment just to celebrate the Mets?
if we had a soundboard now, I would encourage whoever was in charge of it to play the Monty Python, and there was much rejoicing. They were forced to eat Sir Robin's minstrels. There was much rejoicing.
Well, you know where there was not much rejoicing?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Washington football team.
Those places, I'm sure.
I mean,
well.
literally everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. The entire country.
The Bronx.
Well, one place that there was not much rejoicing, to segue now into permanent extent trade, was Constantinople back in 532.
Not Istanbul?
Nice.
No, not yet. We're still firmly in the Byzantine Empire.
Okay.
Actually, I think it would still be Rome, technically, since it was 532. There was no Byzantine.
I think it was the Eastern. I think they split before 532, right? Mm. Anyway, you go on. I'll
I studied history. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
Well, either way, and this one's going to be a little long-winded because it's just like a really crazy actual situation that happened. But anyway.
Huh. Yeah, it sounds like the last week.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, so in 532, the Nika riots broke out in Constantinople. And these riots resulted in basically half of the city being burnt down and destroyed somehow, including the Hagia Sophia. And there was like tens of thousands of people killed. And Emperor Justinian was almost deposed. So a lot of shit was going down. And here's what makes it fascinating to me. Do any of you guys know what actually sparked these riots?
That I think I do, actually. It was chariot racing, correct?
Yes, yes, correct.
This was this was a very common stock clue that would come up all the time in Quiz Bowl tournaments back in the day.
There you go. That's
I'm a fucking
served the
nerd.
Purpose.
That's awesome.
Yeah, basically, chariot races almost brought down the Eastern Roman Empire.
Welcome to your number one chariot racing podcast.
Hell yeah. Basically, at the time, chariot racing was like, you know, kind of like team fandom, like soccer hooligan, kind of that real intense, with like sectarian and political kind of stuff mixed into it. And basically, you know, Justinian himself was not a very popular emperor at the time, and I'm sure that there was some prodding from people that stood to benefit, but basically all of the rooting sections, instead of like fighting with each other like they normally would do, they kind of united and started rioting and almost brought down Justinian. So crazy. Anyway, though, back to promote extend trade.
I have no idea where this is going.
Literally none.
If you were in Shea Stadium, Citi Field, only those two stadiums. Anyway, in the years 1999, 2006, or 2015, what losses would be so heartbreaking and terrible and enraging that you would just start rioting and want to overthrow Sandy Alderson, or who is the GM in 1999?
Cashin?
No,
1999?
Philip.
Oh, I'm deaf.
Philip.
The guy with the rapey guy. What's his name? Sexual harassment guy.
Steve Phillips?
Steve Phillips.
Steve Phillips. I didn't know that.
That's the name.
Steve Today Phillips, herefore after referred to as sexual harassment guy.
I'm going to go ahead and say we should never mention Steve Phillips again.
Like the world's worst superhero. Sexual harassment guy.
I did not know he did that.
So we have,
let's talk about it off the air.
Let's not talk about it.
I'm on Wikipedia right now, so.
Uh-oh. Jesus,
no, I'm not going to say anything on the podcast. I'm just reading
it.
Anyway, though, so you have, the 1999 NLCS loss. You have the 2006 NLCS loss and the 2015 World Series loss. Rank them in terms of how enraged and sad and just devastating and you want to punch holes in walls that makes you. Let's bring the level of celebration down a bit this week.
1999. So I don't remember 1999 particularly well. I was only 4.
It was pretty enraging.
Okay, I don't remember the details of what happened.
2 words, Kenny Rogers.
Yeah, it's Danger a name zone? I never want to hear again. In a way, yes. I think I have a pretty good answer for this already. I think the worst for me was 2015, just having experienced 2006 and knowing, like, getting to the World Series is really, really fucking hard. 2006, I wasn't that devastated because I thought they were going to be back.
Yeah.
Like, I knew they were going to be back.
That's an interesting point.
You know, 2015, I was pretty sure. I was, you know, maybe they get back, but I was pretty sure that was it. That was as close as the Wilpons were going to get.
Yeah, that's fair.
For me, go ahead, Thomas.
Oh, look at us being polite.
Uh-huh. Screw you.
For me, it's 06 because they were the best team in the league, and they should have won the World Series. Like, I don't necessarily think that 2015 team was better than the Royals. I think it was about even. So, like, if you lose a series to a team that's good, then that's fine. Like, it's not that it's fine; it sucks, but. Like, they had a lot of chances to win. They should have won, but also I'd rather have not faced the Royals that year. I remember wanting to face the Blue Jays a lot more.
Yeah, no, I think we're all in agreement that we would have won the ship if the Blue Jays.
I agree. And so in 06, it was just like, this is the team. Like they were clearly going to beat the Tigers. Like, they would have killed the Tigers. Just, I think they might have swept the Tigers. That's how much better they were. And they lost because of just... After the ND catch, and then you're going to strike out with the – it's just like the
team had a few fatal flaws,
yes.
Unfortunately. And nothing – like nothing – things that happened during the season that like just like what are you going to do?
Yeah, like it was unfortunate.
You know, like Duaner Sanchez got into a taxi accident.
And they still throughout all that they were – a pitch away with not giving up a home run, and they did it anyway, and then they were still a pitch away with Beltran with the bases. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, no, yeah, yeah.
It was literally on a platter, and then I don't think the Tigers would have posed much of a chance. Like, in 2015, at least, it was one of those underdog stories where...
Tigers sucked that year.
But you know who was pitching really well for the Tigers?
Rick
Kenny
Porcello.
Fucking Rogers.
Wait, really? That's funny.
Steve, can you like wax poetic about 1999 a little bit? That was just precisely 1 year before I started really following baseball. So
I feel like 1999 the same way that you're feeling about 2006. Like, you know that they were going to get back. And they did. Obviously, they won the World Series in 2000, which I did not list because I feel like that's a separate kind of loss. To the Yankees and mm-hmm. You know, losing to them is a whole different level. But it was like in the late 90s, like you just saw the team incrementally getting better and better. And then it's just like 1999 was just like, oh, this is our time now. And because of Kenny fucking Rogers walking the bases loaded to lose. That's
of
why
all the
that's,
people to ruin a season. With how
that's
good
why it's were. That's why it's the worst on my list. Even though those other losses were in the World Series, which, like Ken said, it's harder to get to. Just like the level of ineptitude, the level of Wilponery to walk in the winning run and lose the NLCS.
Very Mets.
So that is burned into my brain because I don't know if you guys had those like year in review VHS videos. You know what I'm talking about? Like they would make them at the end of a year and it would
that's
be like
a bad year to have.
Okay.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but go on.
I'll try to find them and maybe send them in Slack, but like they would be like the year of the 2000s year of baseball or whatever. And it would just be like things that happened that year.
Like the Mets yearbook kind of thing.
No, but it was not just the Mets. It was everyone. It was the entire...
Oh, okay.
And that's worse.
Yes. So, like, you would watch all this cool stuff about the 1999 Mets, and then it's, like, Andrew Jones walking in the winning run because he got walked with the bases. And it's just like, what? You're like, this is how it ends?
It's a big womp womp.
Hold on exactly. One sec. I'm making sure my perception of Andrew Jones is correct. Oh, never mind. He did walk a lot. Okay, why did I think he was not a walker? How the hell is this dude not in the Hall of Fame? Anyway.
off the field issues.
Okay.
Let's leave it at that.
I'm gonna say that 2006 is the worst one. No. Yeah, 2006 is the worst one for me because it was the baseball gods smiting the Mets, it felt like, right? Like they were the rightful best team and the dice just didn't roll their way.
Mm-hmm.
I have no comments on 1999. Like I said, I don't remember it, but 2015, it was like their own fuck ups that got them that loss, right? Like, why was Matt Harvey sent back out for the ninth, et cetera, right? That wasn't losing to random chance, like what basically happened in 2015. Jesus Christ. Like what happened in game 7 in 2006. That's more tilting to me than, yeah, our manager is Terry Collins and he's an idiot and he threw the game.
Yeah, I know. You gotta reap what you sow sometimes.
Right. It's like, you fucking moron, you deserve this. So, I'm gonna say 2006 is the worst. Plus just the being robbed of, and make no mistake, I think that Andy Chavez catch is still one of the better moments in postseason history for any team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if they win that game, that's like a...
Andy Chavez is a legend.
Yeah.
Top, if we win that game.
Top five playoff moment ever.
That becomes basically the Willie Mays basket catch. Like, right. As iconic as that catch is, the Andy catch becomes that.
There would have been a statue outside of Love.
I struggle to come
This is where
with
he caught the ball or whatever. Like,
yeah. Like it's a struggle to come up with more with a great number of playoff moments that are decidedly bigger than that catch if they win the game. Like there's obviously Joe Carter's home run, and then probably that David Freese thing that happened against the Rangers.
Oh yeah.
It's a very short list though. Like as is, it's probably in the 30s, which is pretty significant given how many moments there have been in baseball postseason history. But that should have been an all-time baseball pantheon moment, and fucking Yadier Molina. And
not even good hitting Yadier Molina yet. He didn't learn how to hit for like years after that.
Fucking.
Did he have the neck tattoo at that point?
Probably. Well, that's what gave him
tell you, that might be what I hate hate about him the most. Is that's a terrible tattoo.
Ken, it's what's given him his offensive ability.
Good, because he's going to have to live with that for a long time.
Like, that Andy Chavez moment was like the second best moment in Mets playoff history behind Mookie Wilson hit and the Bill Buckner error combined. But now it's like, what, 10? You know, like, I don't know, it's kind of tainted. Like, I'll watch a clip of it, and I'll be like, yeah, but they lost.
I'll never be able to shake the feeling of, like, I couldn't believe they lost that game after that catch. I was like, okay, they're going to win after Andy Chavez made that catch. And they did not win.
I mean, I remember literally jumping out, like, as I was watching it with my dad in our living room, jumping out of my chair so quickly that I knocked the chair over and just sprinting down the hallway, yelling like a maniac.
Yeah.
Like the best home run robbing catch I've ever seen, honestly. Like, I'm trying to think of a better one. Like, it's tough.
There's some Griffey ones that might top it. Like,
I've seen Torrey Hunter made a few.
But that one, even like the degree of difficulty of how far away he was from the
like
wall.
Like, he snow-coned it over the wall! And it wasn't like, even one of those super high ones where he had time to get back there and time his jump and everything. He had to, like...
It was poetry. Poetry in motion. Wall.
Was he a good fielder like that?
Yes.
Like, that's more or less why he was on the team.
Because I have, like, memories of him, like, his bunt walk-off hit, which is... My favorite, it's one of my favorite moments in Mets history for some reason. Like, I don't know why, it's just so funny that it's two outs and you know you can't hit, so fuck it. I'm bunting, and it worked. But, like, It's just a guy with, like you said, since he was a good fielder, it's a guy at his peak of fielding doing the peak thing that he's
we,
there
we
for.
We should really be calling Jeff in for this, given that his dog is fucking named Endy.
Interview the dog.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that I have brought the mood sufficiently down, because as Mets fans, we are not allowed to celebrate.
Can I interject one thing here? Mm-hmm. Endy Chavez, for his career, 4.6 FWAR, and that's over like 15 seasons. How much WAR did he have in 2006 for the Mets in 390 plate appearances?
It was something like 2, right?
2.7.
Try again.
3? 3.
Wow. All right. He was that good?
He was league average offense, but really good base running and defense.
Yeah, that's about right.
He's a wizard.
Next best season was like 1.4 for the Rangers in 2011. What a weird career.
That is a weird career.
I'm watching the catch right now.
And the radio call is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Garrett's call?
Yeah. And it's too bad Joe Buck is doing the TV with the Cardinals homerism in play. And he's like, he's freaking disappointed. It's like, a catch. Yay. Clown.
Well, I'm happy we've got all that bad juju out now, because the Mets traded for Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco. Holy shit.
Hooray!
Now, I know that there were some rumors like a couple of weeks ago, maybe even a couple of months ago at this point. Did you actually think that this would happen?
I was a firm maybe with a feeling towards yes.
Mm. You thought Lindor, because I always thought
Aaron Nutter was going to be. I didn't think we would get both Lindor and Carrasco, but I thought the reason Lindor was taking so long is the Indians didn't realize that they had no negotiating leverage. And if there's one thing that I've learned about Sandy Alderson, and Thomas, I think you might disagree with me here, it's that one thing he's really good at is when he names his price, he doesn't balk.
No.
It annoys me a little bit, because like if you balk sometimes it's not bad, but then now you get Francisco Lindor for not much. So
I think that's the key to negotiation, is figuring out what you're willing to pay, and then if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out.
Yeah. Thomas, I think you're probably right in terms of his free agent stance. He should just say fuck it and pay an extra $1 million sometimes. But when it comes to trades,
yeah, that's probably right.
Honestly, I think he's gonna do that. I don't think they care about money in the same way that
they used to.
Right.
Right.
Like, it's real stupid shit if you're trying to sign George Springer and you're $5 million apart and you're holding the line. Like, that's idiotic. But when you're trading R.A. Dickey and you're demanding Noah Syndergaard, or when you're trying to trade for Francisco Lindor and you know that Cleveland has zero leverage, I want Sandy there with that steely, cold grin, just like, yeah, fuck you. I'm not budging.
Yeah, because I know I wouldn't want to call his bluff on the other side, because I think he really would just move on. Like,
and Sandy with a really good player dev or set up behind him doing trade negotiations, that's a fun thought.
It's also, this is the first thing that the new GM does, is like, because Sandy signed McCann, like the first move in a GM's tenure as a general manager, a first time general manager, is trading for Francisco Lindor. Like, okay.
Jared Porter should just retire now.
Yeah, right? Like,
I'm good. I'm out.
Like, talk about starting hot, you know? And
one thing I want to talk about at some point during this is, like, can we compare this to You Never Forget Your First? If you guys get what I mean.
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, Brody never forgot his first, but
His first might have gotten him fired.
I don't think it was a good reason why he never forgot.
You know who probably wants to forget his first? Steve Phillips.
What was his first?
What was the first thing he did?
Oh, never mind.
Oh no.
Anyway,
Kenny Rogers, right?
Let's move on, fellows.
Sorry.
Let's, I guess, talk about Francisco Lindor first. Good player, yes.
A great player, yes.
I think I can comfortably say I am the lowest person on him on this pod, and I still think he is like it's in that top 3 to 8 range in baseball.
Look, yeah. All I really know, and I have to admit, the last like 2 years or so, maybe 3 years, I don't know. I barely watch like Major League Baseball anymore. Like, I don't go to games very rarely, I should say. Maybe I've gone to like one game over the last like 2 years, whatever, you know. But so all I'm just judging is just basically looking at the FOR leaderboards, and Francisco Lindor is number 3 behind Mike Trout, obviously, and Mookie Betts.
Since when?
Since 2015, when he made his major league debut.
Those two guys above him are pretty good, and the two guys behind him are also pretty good.
Yep. Yeah,
that's about right.
Look, like you can really manipulate that board a lot by changing the endpoint, but I think it's pretty I think most
that's people, a pretty big sample, right?
Right.
Let's lower it a little bit to 2016 and see what happens.
Yeah, he's still pretty damn high.
He's actually lower. He's actually lower behind one of the guys that I think you think is better than him.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Okay, see, my point wasn't that I thought he was better than him, just that there's an argument, right? I think if you talk to most baseball people, they're like, okay, Mike Trout is the best player in baseball. There is a gap, and then Mookie Betts. Maybe not even that big a gap anymore, because Mookie Betts is God now, but let's see him do it again before we say he's equivalent to Trout. Then another gap, and then there is a pool of really, really, really good, like, Hall of Fame track players who still aren't Trout or Betts. And that's Lindor, I think that's Rendon, Jose Ramirez, Christian Yelich, Nolan Arenado if his shoulder's healthy, Freddie Freeman arguably. I think you could make a case for Tatis, Soto, and Acuna, but I'd say give them another year.
Yeah, that's early, but they'll be there.
Right, right. If they do this again, then I'd say they're in this group. And then I want to see a full season of Bregman sans trash can, but he might belong in this grouping as well. Right?
Pete Alonso?
Yeah. Definitely Pete Alonso.
Yes.
So there's a bunch of really fucking I think there are people who will feel more strongly than I do that Lindor is the best of that group. I think it's closer than that. But you're going to – it's a real fucking good player.
Like, instantly the best player on the team.
Yes.
Not named Jacob DeGrom, obviously.
Position player, yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of talent here already. Yeah. Like,
it's the best position player the Mets have had since prime David Wright.
Right. And here's the other thing about that, like, ranking. Most of those dudes are either unavailable or were recently available but were older or demonstrably worse. Right? Like, yeah. Rendon, you're signing at 30.
Machado and has and had Harper serious problems with his health. Rendon.
Right. Machado and Harper are both also really good, but probably a little bit worse than Lindor. Guys like Correa.
They're more inconsistent. Like,
yeah.
You never know what you're getting with those two. Like, yep. you're going to get an MVP year or a good one. And mm-hmm.
And then people are going to bring up all the shortstops that are going to be free agents in the next couple of years, like Correa and Seager and Story, I think, as well, right? And they're all good, but they're also either worse or older or both.
I mean, they're all worse. The only person in the only shortstop in the league to me that has a argument that is going to have an argument to challenge him as best shortstop in the league is Tatis.
Yeah.
That's it. Yep. And if Lindor gets bumped down to second best shortstop in the league, then too bad. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know,
and,
like.
And just one thing I want to say about Lindor, his value is we don't do defensive value particularly well. I think he's undervalued by most most WAR metrics.
Sure.
His defense is insane. Like,
it's not. Yeah,
people have been talking about it since he was like 17. Like,
I'm hardly a scout here. To me, he's not. He's not peak Simmons, right? But he's right below that.
About as close as you can get.
Yeah, he's about as close as you could get to the best shortstop, defensive shortstop of all time.
Charlton Simmons was a freaking god.
Hey, that's Ray Ordonez, man.
That's true, probably.
Omar Vizquel?
No. Oh, wait. He's Ray Ordonez, who's a very good hitter.
That's right.
He's Ray Ordonez who hits like he's not as good a hitter as David Wright probably, but like
comfortably 15 to 20% above league average.
Yeah. And here's the other thing.
If Ray Ordonez did that, Ray Ordonez might still be playing.
He would be in the Hall of Fame.
Probably. Yeah, Ray Ordonez would be a Hall of Fame. Zero retired by the Mets.
No kidding. Here's the other thing about Lindor. And this is something I noticed while I was writing the grading article. Shockingly, I gave this move an A+.
C point. No.
Like you flip through and there's like people make criticisms of Lindor. It's like, okay, sometimes he doesn't make contact. Sometimes his power's not there. Sometimes he's not running. He's never really had a season where he's done them all at once.
Ooh, if he does.
Right. If that happens, it's the 2020 Betts season.
Yeah, he's the MVP. And then, right. Then he's like a 10 war play. Right. If he does all of it at once, which is possible. He's only 27. Like,
yeah.
It's not like he's 31. But
the best seasons yet to come.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, right? We're talking about all these guys who in that same tier of players, and like your options for acquiring these guys are almost without fail older or worse, right? Like Nolan Arenado might be an almost equivalent player, but you're acquiring him 3 years older. Harper and Machado are worse. The only equivalent is Betts, and I think just the proximity of that is making people overlook how rare it is for a player of this caliber to be removed in their prime.
Yes. I've also seen a lot of things on Twitter, like, so asterisk on that, but like people are like, oh, he's like a 120 weighted hitter. Okay, like there's other parts of baseball. And he's the type of star that, like, he's not the best hitter in the league. Like, he won't even be the best hitter on the Mets, probably, but he'll be the best player on the Mets. And that's important regardless. Like, it doesn't matter if your star, where your star makes his value. The value is you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Conforto might have a higher weighted than him next year, but he's going to be a worse player, so.
The hardest guys to find are the guys who do everything well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I saw people in the comments talking about how, like, oh, he's not even as good a hitter as Jeff McNeil. First of all, he probably is, right? But second of all, if Jeff McNeil could play shortstop, he'd be the top five player.
Yeah, exactly.
If Jeff McNeil was a 7 or 8 at short, he'd be a 7 more player.
And he's not because no one else
can, play short.
Only like
you can't do it.
Only a few people are 7. Or 8.
No, I will not. I wanted him to play shortstop in like 2017. Back when we were like constantly lobbying the Mets to call him up, and they just wouldn't for some fucking reason. It was like, yeah, play McNeil at shortstop. It'll be fine.
I think we all know the reason they weren't calling him up.
Yes. Yes, fine.
Something. I can only play second base.
Stop it. To distill that yelling and ranting over the last 10 minutes there, Francisco Lindor, good at baseball.
Yeah.
Will be worth the $300 million contract the Mets will give him in like 2 months.
When a player like this, when you have a chance to get a player like this, you do it very simply. Like.
And this is also when Steve Cohen was talking about when he first bought the team and was like, 3 to 5 year window for a World Series. This is the type of person who, in 5 years, he's going to be like 32. Like, he's still going to be very good. He's still going to be in the middle of his peak years because baseball players at 32 are still very good, you know? Like, this is someone you acquire and the entire organization is built around him. Because if the Mets signed Springer, they could still do that. You don't really build around 31-year-old George. You know, like, George Springer is someone you sign because he's very good, but he's not the face of your franchise. Like, Lindor is the guy here.
Perhaps the appropriate analogy is, like, they just acquired David Wright, and now they should go out and sign Carlos Beltran.
Yeah, that's about right. He's worse. Like, it's a bit of a different, like, level player, but yeah.
Yeah, but that's like,
that's the analogy, there. For sure. I agree.
Yeah, that. Works
also, I think Beltran was younger when he signed than Springer is now. But point being,
Was also quite a bit better than Springer is now.
Springer's pretty good.
Springer's pretty good, but Carlos Beltran's like pantheon, you know?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yep.
A park police unit.
Police say several young men got into a fight. Brother was stabbed, and park police were called in.
In the late 70s, tensions between Houston police and the Mexican-American community exploded. The result was a daring experiment for five young Latino police officers. They were tasked with solving Houston's toughest crimes and rebuilding trust, all while being torn between the neighborhoods that raised them and the badges they wore. My name is Cristela Alonso, and this is the story of the Chicano Squad. Subscribe to Chicano Squad from the Vox Media Podcast Network on Spotify or wherever you listen.
Well, you know who else is pretty good? The other guy that the Mets acquired in the trade, who, again, just according to F-War, is the 10th best pitcher in baseball since 2015, since I was, you know, looking up the same search that I was looking up Lindor with.
And that also includes a year where he had
cancer. Had cancer!
And then beat cancer. And he was bad that year, but who cares? Because he, like, needed to save his life. You know what I mean? Like, he did all that and had an, and is in one of the elite pitchers in the game, which is, I didn't know he was that good.
He started the year, fell off, found out he had cancer, went and dealt with it, and came back.
It's crazy.
Maybe those 80 innings are an outlier?
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Just a thought that it doesn't matter what he did on the baseball field that year. Like,
he wasn't even bad. He was like league average as opposed to 20 to 30% better than league average.
But he's what, the Mets' second best pitcher now?
Yes.
Yeah, easy.
And they got him for free? Yeah.
Like, now, to be clear, he's not this good anymore. He's like 33 or 34. Like, he was one of the most underrated aces in baseball over the last half decade. Now he's 33. He's like he's still a good number two starter.
But you take that all day for.
Oh, yes.
It's a throw in.
How many pitchers in 2019 and 2020 struck out more than 10 per 9? I'm willing to bet. How many starters struck out more than 10 per 9? Because I'm willing to bet it's not a big number.
I would say
literally 14.
Oh, I was going to guess 60.
In 2019. Or in 2020. Now let's see 2019. Fascinating radio. So if you guys want to cover for me,
over 2019 and 2020, only 17 qualified total. Struck out more than, well, I guess I should lower that inning pitch.
How many of those guys are the clear number one on their team?
Let's see. Chris Sale would be if healthy. Oh, wait, now I'm getting relievers. No, I just want starters.
I think I got it, Lucas.
Okay.
Let me see.
I apologize for the
noise in the background.
It's also, when I was looking up Carrasco, I didn't realize how good of a strikeout pitcher he was. For some reason in my head, I thought he was a ground ball pitcher. Like, I don't know why I typecasted him this way, but then I looked at his numbers. I was like, oh, he's out here striking 30% of batters.
So I have the list. The number one is Garrett Cole, 13.25. So he's the clear unquestioned number one on his team. Max Scherzer is number two, clear unquestioned number one on his team. Robbie Ray, number three. Probably on whatever team he was on, but, you know. There's a pretty big gap there, and he has some pretty other significant flaws, so throw him out of there. Verlander.
Yep.
Yes.
Love of my life, Jacob DeGrom.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I think he's the ace.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Shane Bieber. Also probably an ace.
Also ace.
Yeah, he's the ace.
Lucas Giolito.
Now the ace.
Yeah, probably, right? On the White Sox.
Yep.
Yu Darvish. Probably the ace.
Of the ace.
Trevor Bauer, let's move on. Matthew Boyd, also in the pretty good but pretty flawed
tier.
I mean, you're running into the dudes who just can't throw a strike.
Yeah, no, so he's not of
that. He's the Tigers' ace, but.
That's not exactly a high standing.
And then there's a few other, like Charlie Morton, Luis Castillo, Sonny Gray, Aaron Nola. You know,
geez, the Reds had a good pitching staff last year.
Yes, they did.
Yeah,
I mean, I usually do K minus walks, and that eliminates the like Robbie Ray's and Matthew Boyd's, and he's 18th on that list over the last 2 years. And to reiterate, he had cancer in 2019. So even with that season, his 22.2 strikeout minus walk percentage rates 18th in baseball.
Yeah.
really, really good, and he's not the best player in this trade.
Trevor Bauer's behind him.
Trevor Bauer's behind a lot of players, but people don't want to acknowledge that. But anyway, so...
He's also making pennies.
Well, yeah, that too. And he signed, I think, till 2023?
Yeah, it's 2 years, 24. And then there's a $14 million team option with a $3 million buyout that vests if he's healthy in 2022. So in other words, he either, worst case scenario, he flames out and you don't pay him. Best case, you have an ace for 3 years and $40 million.
Yeah. Like, it's entirely possible that after 2 years, he's still healthy and good. And you just pencil him in behind DeGrom again. And you call it a day with your top two guys.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, the Mets have acquired a face of the franchise and an ace pitcher. And you would think that, you know, for guys like that, you would need to give up a haul.
Yep.
And that is not what happened. Not at all.
Nope.
Oh, we're getting to the fun part now, guys.
Yep, this is, you know,
our
this
time
is,
to shine.
Yes, this is from Complex to Queen, so minor league time. Roughly 35 minutes into the minor league podcast.
look.
It's been a busy.
We get to yell about major league things too.
It is to Queens.
That is
right,
true.
Right.
It's not from Complex to Syracuse.
So, first that the guy they gave up is Ahmed Rosario. I think that he's been on the team on the major league level long enough that he is no longer in our jurisdiction. But
I could not possibly care less about trading Ahmed Rosario.
I do want to say a few things about Ahmed, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Ahmed was supposed to be Francisco Lindor 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. I mean,
that's no longer the case.
instead, he was Alcides Escobar, but worse.
Ahmed, thank you for your service. You're going to do okay in Cleveland. I promise. Maybe.
Yeah, I wish him all the best.
Nothing but the best.
In his future endeavors.
You're not Francisco Lindor. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah. The next one, who is technically a major leaguer and graduated as a prospect, but I think is still that still happened recent enough that he is kind of in our wheelhouse, is Andrés Giménez. The Mets, I think, definitely sold high on him just based on his performance last year, which is good. Good use of, you know, the value there. I don't know if he'll ever be able to repeat that. He might, or if that is the high watermark for him. But
I'm willing to bet he does.
Yeah, I think that's likely.
Just knowing who he is and, you know, the quality of his character, I guess.
But yeah. I mean,
and also, Cleveland is good with their player development stuff. So, like, I would not be surprised if he ends up being a good shortstop. But
I think he's going to crack a few All-Star games before all is said and done.
I hard disagree on that, actually.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but he is definitely a guy that you can't not root for.
I'm going to miss him here, for sure.
Yeah,
dude's going to stick around forever because he's an above-average shortstop bat who can hit, like, 10% worse than league average.
Yeah. He has big, like he's 33.
He's a little better
than backup,
that, but
he's like a backup infielder vibe. But
I think
he's a clear 55. Clear 55.
Sure. Probably have him closer to 50. But there's like the thing is like, let's take the rosiest view on Giménez, right? His bat to ball is super good. His plate discipline is great. He's able to bat 300 and. OBP 350 and his slugging is still 400 because he has literally zero power.
Yeah.
Like there's no star in here.
Yeah,
there's very little
that.
Upside.
This isn't even trading like Jared Kelenic, right? Where I mean, obviously Kelenic had more risk, but there is the star upside. Giménez does not have that.
If there's going to be something here that bites us in the ass, it's something that's going to come completely out of left field.
Yep.
Something that we could not possibly have foreseen.
The only thing that bites us in the ass is if they don't extend Lindor and you don't trade 8 years of control of shortstops to do that.
There's approximately 0.0% chance they do not extend Lindor.
Exactly. Like honestly.
Jared Porter comes in with a bang and leaves with a bang. Uh-huh.
like, even if all four of these players are good, like, we haven't talked about two of them yet, we will get to them, but it doesn't matter, because Francisco Lindor is a top 10 player in baseball.
Yeah, I would trade it almost,
like, when we were talking about Lindor before, I was like, I'll trade whoever.
Like, well, let's go over the prospects, and then yeah, we can get, yeah, have our takes about the whole value.
Gotcha. Okay, so, but yeah, so, Andres Jimenez, you know, we will miss you. You were a good kid. Me and Ken were talking about it yesterday. Extremely mature, extremely likable, and we wish
he's
him...
a guy who's going to get every bit of talent out of himself. He's going to get all of it onto the field. Everything
we wish
he could possibly
him
do.
All the best in Cleveland, and I'm sure that he'll have a long and solid career, if nothing else.
I can't wait for my Andres Jimenez Cleveland Spiders shirt, see?
So now, the two guys the Mets gave up. And for Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco, you would think, okay, obviously Ronnie Mauricio has to be involved. Obviously Matthew Allen has to be involved. Francisco Alvarez, no. None of them. And it's a good thing that literally the day that the trade went down, that it was announced in public, we finished publishing our top 25 prospect list.
Sandy was waiting for the 1 through 5 to come out, and he was like,
he was waiting for the go ahead.
Yeah, he was like, oh, perfect. Yeah. They published it.
Clearly,
let's check the song.
So they gave up their 7th ranked prospect, Josh Wolf, and their 11th. Oh shit, I don't have that in front of me. Top prospect, Isaiah Green.
I think we got him 13th. I'll check real quick.
How embarrassing is that? I don't even know my own list.
Mm-hmm. It's been a long
week, Steve.
But, Wolf is 7th and Green is 13th.
13, all right. So, I mean, it's not like they're nothing, but they are only conceptually something. They are two super young prep players that have, you know, Wolf has, I think, 20-ish innings of professional experience under his belt, all at GCL level. And Isaiah Green, who was drafted last year, has no actual professional innings other than, you know, complex stuff, you know, unofficial complex stuff and the instructs. So, you know, the Mets pulled a heist.
Look, I'm not going to be surprised if the Indians turn Josh Wolf into something because they're really good at pitcher development.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take 3 or 4 years for that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, best case scenario, you have the two of them debuting in, like, 2023 or so.
Like, let's consider the nightmare scenario here, right? Like, Wolf really, really pops. The prep stuff works. The Indians bring him along. Green's prep stuff is legit, and he's a low-end 5-tool center fielder. I'm still not convinced that gets you more war than Lindor and Carrasco do only over the life of their current contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's without considering the fact that you get to extend Lindor.
Yeah.
100% correct.
It's the Mets finally being like, hey, we're a big market team. And, like, I mean, this is very bad for baseball that teams have to do this. Or not have to, that teams choose to do this. Mm-hmm. But the Mets looked at Cleveland and they were like, we're going to take all this money from you, and that's what you want. So here's prospects that are good but not great for a top 10 player and a very good pitcher.
For literally maybe the best position player you've developed in a long time.
Yeah. Like,
let's see. Who has been
– Jose Ramirez was also developed by them, right?
Yes.
Yes.
All Jose right, Ramirez.
Well, we can talk about that.
Grady Sizemore.
Sizemore would have been, but that's
yeah. Sizemore would have been better.
Carlos Santana. I mean, they've developed some decent dudes, but
he was the face of their franchise for a reason.
Yeah,
like, and you traded him for two very young prospects, a shortstop who has had 4 bad years in the majors, and one that doesn't have much of a ceiling. So here we are.
I think at this point that Ahmed is just bad.
Probably, but I'd like to see him with a team that's smarter than the Mets. Maybe they could fix him up a little bit, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, he's still athletic and speedy and whatever else. And only 25, I think, or 26.
That's crazy.
So he might have a second life in Cleveland. Who knows?
Like, if the Mets had made this trade with Matt Allen instead of Josh Wolf, still a good trade. They made this trade with Matt Allen and PCA instead of Wolf and Green.
Still a good trade.
Still a good trade. I might have sat here and argued against it at that point because just spend your money on Springer and Real Muto or something. But at this point, they gave up nothing. They gave up the 7th and 13th prospects in a farm system that's like bottom 10 in baseball.
I think that if they included, you know, Mauricio, Allen, Alvarez, PCA, like the top five guys, Baby on our list, PCA wasn't in the top, was he?
Six for us, right?
Six, yeah, so. But it would make it feel a little tougher, but at the end of the day, you're still getting Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco, you know? Like, that softens any blow.
I would look at that trade and be like, that's fair. Like,
yeah. And you could trade for all top five guys, you know?
Yeah. Like, there's been worse trades. There's been, obviously, the Mets have made worse trades, but that's a fair trade. Like with the cream of the crop in the Mets system is definitely not bad, even though the system as a whole is. So, like, if Cleveland got one of those guys, it would have been solid for them, but
looking at this deal, I would have probably just dealt, like, the two – I mean, I don't give a shit about Ahmed. I would have dealt the two prospects for Carrasco.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would have been a fair move, too.
And then you throw in a floor over ceiling shortstop and you get back the best shortstop in baseball. And probably like a $50 million discount on his eventual extension. Or maybe that's an overestimate, a $30 million discount. Some sort of discount over what you'd have to pay in free agency.
It's just, so Porter was pretty, I think Porter said this, I can't remember who it was, because I was at work during the presser, so I was reading it along on Twitter, not paying attention to work. But basically, they said that we have like five or six untouchable prospects, and everyone else is kind of fair game. And the Mets managed to hold on to all of them and get Francisco Lindor. And that's just – it's such – even if you don't really – because Sandy was kind of saying how he doesn't want to trade much. And, yeah, I get that, and I tend to agree. But also when this deal comes to your door – if they would have said no because they don't want to trade prospects, like, come on. You know, like, there's limits to you don't want to trade prospects, and I think...
The Mets shouldn't be trading for, like, as little as he went for. Like, the Mets shouldn't be trading for Yu Darvish. The Mets shouldn't be trading for Blake Snell. Like, to be clear, those moves were both good for the teams that acquired the Major League pitcher, but there's really no reason to. Just go spend money and hold on to your prospects. Lindor is the tier that you say, screw it, I'm spending my prospects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I don't think all those shortstops are reaching free agency next year. Like, this happens often, yeah, where teams are like, where people are like, oh yeah, the market in 2023 is going to be crazy. Absolutely. And then all those dudes get locked up.
Yep.
So like, sitting around and waiting for the guy to hit free agency usually just doesn't work. Like,
mm-hmm. I've been wanting the Mets to do this since Paul Goldschmidt got traded and then extended to the Cardinals. I wanted the Mets to do precisely this since that happened.
This is what you should be doing when teams are telling. Either that or get someone like, I don't think they'll do it now, but get someone like Arenado who would clearly opt into his deal, or you could negotiate with him to make the opt-out later or something. Like, flex your financial muscle to get the dude that the small market team doesn't want to pay. And they did.
I mean, look, if they want to go totally balls to the wall, go trade for Arenado and sign Springer and just have the best offense of all time.
Could you imagine the left side of that infield?
Holy fuck. Could you imagine that team? What do you do with that lineup at that point?
You bat Pete Alonso seventh?
Hopefully we find out. That would be a nice surprise.
To be clear, at this point, I think they still should make one more big addition. I don't know that they will because it really comes down to whether they want to go past the tax or not now. Right? They could go, if they go $10 million over the tax, they could fill out the rest of the team while affording Springer. But if they don't want to go over the tax, you wind up with like Jackie Bradley Jr. instead.
At this point, I don't really care.
Yeah.
They've done enough. This is beautiful. I mean, they need a center fielder. Yeah, obviously. But, like...
I'm
chill with whatever happens now.
Yep. I mean, this move alone, this is like replacing... I don't want to even say that Corey Oswalt was... It's not even like replacing Corey Oswalt. It's literally
you can't replace Corey Oswalt.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's exactly what I'm saying, Steve. No, because they were never going to not add another starter. That was not viable. So they've gone over a blank spot, an upgrade over a blank spot in the rotation to Carrasco and Jimenez to Lindor. It's 10 wins?
Yeah.
Eight wins is probably a more fair estimate, but...
That's still a considerable upgrade.
And, like, with the Carrasco thing that we haven't really talked... We talked about him a bit, but he's a lot better than almost every major league free agent starter. Like...
Go to RISD.
Exactly. Like the names that they were linked to, if you're not paying for Bauer, and Bauer is also... Who knows what he's going to be, because he has plenty of years where he was just an average pitcher. But, like, I guess you could sign Odorizzi. That's boring. Like, he'll be fine.
You know what you could still do? Sign Odorizzi.
I know you can. Yeah.
Sign Tanaka. Like,
big but brain. Now they could start being like a Tanaka could be in play. Someone like Kluber or Paxton to really just swing on a guy. Because I think they said they're going to go watch both of them pitch. They said Kluber specifically. They're going to go to his bullpen. But
I'm afraid Kluber's cooked, but that's a different
probably,
discussion.
But yeah, that's a whole different story. If he's cheap enough, I don't really care. But, my cat is meowing. I don't know if you could hear her. But,
Did.
Is she, her podcast debut.
Oh, goddamn, we have to pay her now.
The money five ways? Fuck.
But yeah, it's just, you probably upgraded your pitching staff more than I expected them to. Because I didn't think they were going to get someone at this level, and you got him alongside Lindor.
Mm-hmm.
Really impressive deal. It's a really impressive one. It's really interesting that Cleveland even did this too, like didn't hold out for more. But I don't think they were the suitors.
So just individually, what is your favorite aspect of this whole thing? Be it, you know, performance on the field, performance off the field, what the Mets gave up, what, you know, just the whole thing. Summed into just like a couple of sentences. Like,
let's just go in order because I don't want to talk over anyone.
Yeah. So, all right. So, Ken, go first then.
No, literally the whole thing. This is hope, guys. This would never have happened under the Wilpons. Never. No. Never in a million years.
No.
This is the first thing Steve Cohen has done where I'm like, okay, this guy might be for real.
Yeah, I was definitely starting to lose faith after Sagano. Basically, they were not linked to him anymore, and it just kind of felt like, what is Cohen doing? Like, he's spending his time on Twitter bullshitting, but we're not seeing results here. And yeah, like you said, the hope.
In a way, definitely... isn't Steve Cohen all of us shitposting on Twitter while he waits for
in
the
way,
off season to happen?
Isn't that exactly what I want in the guy who owns my favorite baseball team?
Look, he could be Wilponing it and shitposting in the boardroom next to Jared Porter. Instead, he's like, you know, you go do your thing. I'm gonna go shitpost on Twitter.
If it was,
but then figure out how to do any of this.
if it was the Wilpon, if it was Jeff Wilpon, he'd be posting on Parler. So
no. I just spit my drink all over my table.
Let's never name Parler again, guys.
Oh god damn it, Steve.
Never again.
No. So well, Lucas, now that you have a free mouth because you no longer have a drink in it.
I'm definitely the, or at least normally the least emotional person here. So to me, just the total lack of payment here is just amazing to me that they gave up fuck all. And I say, and I like Andrés Giménez. It's a nice little piece to have around. And I love dreaming on prep outfielders. That's like my kryptonite in terms of prospects. You say there's like a chance of a five-tool center fielder. Son of a bitch, I'm in. But they gave up nothing and got Francisco Lindor.
Yeah. Thomas?
It's for me, as much as the on-the-field stuff is going to be great, like watching Francisco Lindor just play shortstop for the Mets, like the first time he gets a ground ball and Gary Cohen's like fielded by Lindor, I'm gonna like cry a little bit. But like, this is special in a way that the Mets might actually, like, I'm always mad at the Mets a little bit. Like, I love them, but I'm always like, you idiots. Like,
they let you down a lot.
Yeah, because
it's okay to say.
And like, I just didn't really ever think it was going to change. Even when the ownership stuff was happening, I was like, I don't know, it's always the Mets. But this isn't the Mets anymore. Like, this is the new Mets, and it's very fun. And like, now the possibilities are endless. Like in other sports, I'm a Lakers fan, and we're the worst in terms of fan bases. We're photoshopping everyone into Lakers. That's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be like, Mike Trout, he's unhappy, Mets uniform. You know what I mean? Like the possibilities now are through the roof because the Mets saw that they needed to take on money and trade for a player who's going to make like $300 million and said yes. And the Wilpons were like, Yoenis Cespedes wants a contract. Here's 10 opt-outs. The difference between the two is so massive that it's going to be fun to be a Mets fan. When it was kind of like work sometimes. It was always fun because the Mets were like lovable losers, but screw that.
Thomas, all I'm going to say is stay away from Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. You can't have them.
there was too much Ben Simmons slander in that draft in Lakers Twitter. So, because they all wanted Lonzo. Ugh.
Does your cat have anything to add?
She's running around. So
I'm ecstatic then, I guess.
Yeah,
she is ecstatic because she's like, you don't get to yell at the TV angrily anymore.
For me, it's just like the Mets got guys that are legit guys and they just gave up like nothing. Like Lucas was saying, the returns is just part of that, I think, is I never actually got to see either one of those guys. They didn't really, you know, move up the system. So there's still, to everybody, just kind of more names than, you know, guys that we've been cheering for years and years. So that definitely softens the blow. But like we were saying before, even if it was Rondon Mauricio and Francisco Alvarez and Matthew Allen, you still pull the trigger on that deal because you're getting back one of the best players in baseball and you're getting back one of the better pitchers in baseball. And it's hard to argue against that. And for me personally, also, I wrote this on the Mets on Amazing Avenue in our story, but I can never spell Isaiah. I don't know what it is.
Me neither. I can't do it either.
Yeah. So now that he's gone, that's like a huge weight off my shoulders. Like, oh, God.
But there's always an extra A in it that I forget.
Yeah, or there isn't. I keep putting an extra one, but there isn't in this one.
It's one or the other. It's never. I always get it wrong too. No matter what Isaiah it is, I always spell it the opposite way. Like I'm like, oh, this one is no A, and then there is. So.
Unfortunately for me, though, but kind of, it doesn't really matter because it's not really going to be anything I'm going to be doing too much. I can never spell Francisco either. I always put a C-I-S instead of an S-I-S.
Oh, true.
Frankie.
So. Yeah, good thing that Francisco Lindor is not a prospect because that'd be driving me crazy. As it is, I need to deal with Francisco Alvarez, so maybe one day I will get there, though.
I can't believe we have a marketing giant.
Yep.
Lindor, too.
Steve, quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Are you more or less likely after this trade to be more invested in the Mets major league team than the minors?
It does not move the needle for me at all because...
Okay. Fair enough.
I still enjoy the Mets, obviously, you know, like, it just, I don't get the visceral fun reaction.
You have a special interest.
Right, exactly. It's just, I've become more, to me, going to a game and just watching it, like, you know, it's just like, oh, okay, whatever. I have more fun going to the game, taking pictures of dudes, following along with their velocities and the pitches that they're throwing and all that, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's like just passively watching a game, just kind of like, whatever.
I can't wait for the first time I go to, because I score all the games I go to because I'm a huge fat nerd.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to write F. Lindor in the scorebook for the first time, too. That's going to be wild. I'm just assuming we could go to games. I know.
And the cat agrees.
Yeah, she does agree. She's like, get out of the house. Assuming we could go to games like this year. It's just going to be so cool to write that and just be like, oh, look, Francisco Lindor, New York Met. Like, it's not going to hit me until opening day or spring training when he's in the uniform and SNY is tweeting literally everything that he does because he's, which for good reason. And it's just, it's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the opening day, like, pomp and circumstance and seeing him come out of the dugout and having Howie announce his name and everything will be fun.
It's going to be wild, yeah.
All right, we will wrap things up now with the Will Pondery of the Week, and I think this week it goes without saying. So, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address from complexthequeens@gmail.com. You could follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Seipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week with our regularly scheduled prospect list countdown. And this bugged the shit out of me because I'm someone that likes order and structure. And having to interrupt our countdown this week was driving me crazy. But we can't not, you know, we can't no-sell the whole trade and just be like, oh, yeah, it didn't happen. We have to cover it, obviously. But
we'll talk about it in a month.
Yeah. Next week, we will be back to talking about our top 21, 2021 prospects. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.